It's been a wild week in real estate, with Sirhan launch parties taking over California. Plus, Compass makes more moves toward a nationwide MLS, prompting Zillow to file another lawsuit, an antitrust lawsuit, on May 12th. I'm going to go over these headlines and much more with Justin Nimmergood of Top Gun Team, DFW All-Stars, and Epic Realty. Welcome back to The Clean Close. Welcome to The Clean Close, Justin.
Thank you, Courtney. It's great to be on today. Thanks for having me.
Well, it is my pleasure. You know, your story is amazing to me. I one time read a book. The thing that all successful people have in common is a high risk tolerance. And I think you fit this mold perfectly. When I was reading up on your bio, I saw this note that said, in January 2014, Justin woke up with a negative bank account balance. Can you just set the stage for our audience on who you are, how you got to where you are, and, you know, what happened with your negative balance? I want to know everything.
Oh, shoot, Courtney. Let's just get right into it, right out of the gate, right?
Right into it.
Well, again, thanks again for having me on. And, you know, this is part of a bigger story about my serial entrepreneurship, I'll say. You know, from a young age, I think it's pretty well known now. You can Google me, you'll see it. But I started my first business when I was 10, when eBay was just starting to become sort of a known household brand and thing, right? You know, e-commerce was becoming big. And I can remember my dad, you know, I was just starting to get into the game of golf and I wanted this new set of clubs. And my dad said to me, he said, you know, son, how many lawns do you have to mow in order to save up for that set of clubs? And it was a lot, right? I was mowing lawns, you know, for money at the time. And I'm like, that is a lot of lawns, Dad. You know, it's going to take me all summer basically to do that, to save up for the set of clubs. I thought there's got to be a better way, right? And I found eBay. I found some stuff around the home, was able to sell it, save up enough for my first set of clubs. And really, I've been...
Wait a second. You were like, Mom, can I sell this thing in the garage you don't use? And she was like, okay.
Pretty much. Okay. I was like, Mom, Dad, hey, I'm going to sell this thing in the garage that you don't really use, clearly don't need it, and I'll give you 50%. And they're like, sure, son, if you can get 50%, not a problem. So they were all supportive of it. To be honest, they wanted to get rid of a lot of the junk that they had. So it actually turned out to be a pretty lucrative venture. And it's something even still to this day, anything when I'm done with it, I'll sell it online. I'm big on just, you know, getting rid of and not really accumulating a bunch of old stuff. So that was the start of my entrepreneurial journey. Fast forward, you know, we'll kind of do a quick track to 2014 to get to that story, which is a pretty interesting one. I was really getting really heavily into personal development, specifically in 2011 on, but 2013, I was on a tear. I went to several Tony Robbins events. I was at Date with Destiny in December of 2013. I can remember thinking to myself, God, I'm really screwed up when it comes to my attachment and association with money. But the way I view money, the way I view a job, basically everything that I had been wired with my entire life felt all of a sudden felt wrong. It felt...
Okay. Before you get off this for a second, what did you discover that money like meant for you?
I believe money really meant, you know, for me,
control.
What I was taught to meant that, I mean, no, not even enjoyment. It was about control. It was about power. It was about status. It was about security, for sure. Security. Right. And that was the leading value for me at that time was security. And to your point about being able to handle risk tolerance as an entrepreneur, being what we all have in common, I didn't have that. And I didn't have that because I was wired a certain way. And so like we all learn, in order to change what we want to be, we have to sometimes change our wiring, you know, our behavior. So I was at this Date with Destiny event, Tony Robbins. It was at, it was Palm Springs, California. You know, having a great time, learning a ton, absolutely transforming, you know, literally before my eyes. And I realized this about myself. And I also realized, you know what, that tech sales thing that you're doing, that job, whatever you want to call it, with Cisco Systems, you know, following, you know, in your dad's footsteps, so to speak, because my dad was a very successful, you know, corporate executive, sales executive for a very long time, lots of big companies that he worked for. And I was basically following in his footsteps. And I realized it wasn't what I was destined to do. There was other things that made me happier. Real estate being one of them, something that I took on my own from a very, you know, very young age. I mean, I really kind of started that journey in 2006. We'll come back to that, I'm sure, later. But, you know, I'm there at this event and I know I've absolutely got to change my wiring. And I realized in order to change your wiring, you've got to change your association with money completely.
Right.
Yeah. And it was something that I was so diligent about saving. I, you know, basically was a penny pincher. I mean, I saved every last little penny, every last little dollar, almost to a fault. I was not very generous with my money, to be completely honest, not like I am certainly today. And I had like zero risk tolerance. So if anything was risky whatsoever, I wouldn't do it. And I thought,
well,
okay,
you know, if I could just jump in here now, because I think this is really relevant to a lot of real estate agents, especially in this market right now. So I cannot tell you how many times I have conversations with agents where I say, okay, let's go over your marketing plan. And it's like, well, you know, it costs so much to send a postcard, or it costs so much to do this thing, or it's like so much effort, or it costs so much money to record social content constantly. And, you know, that deficiency mindset, you get exactly that outcome. Like I don't know, it's a frustration. There's a hurdle for a lot of people in that mindset, especially when it comes to marketing. I'm just finding that, like today I was with my makeup artist who I love, who's amazing and talented, and she's so good. And she said, I was thinking of sending postcards out to like Studio City. And I'm like, why would you do that? You know, the odds of you hitting your target are so small. But, you know, when people think I have a limited amount of money to spend, the way they think about the possible solution to a problem is also limited. But when you think, well, if I spend this, if I do this right, or if I expand this concept, then it's like limitless how much impact you could have if you just get outside the box of kind of being, for better or worse, you know, cheap. And, you know, I think that that bleeds for a real estate agent from the beginning of the day when you wake up and you start thinking of what you're doing today to be seen, or what connections you're making, or what deals you're trying to put together, to, you know, to the end of the day. There are people who literally do nothing all day. And then there was just a new statistic that came out today that said, like, you know, again, it's been another year of many, many agents, like the majority of agents, not even closing one deal. And it's like, well, what were you doing all day? What were you doing? You have to be in a space where you have something to offer that attracts the people who want to, you know, contribute to your abundance. Anyway, yeah, I digress.
What you're saying resonates
with a lot of conversations I've had lately about marketing spend.
Well, and yeah, and this is a whole nother topic in itself, which is just like abundance mindset versus scarcity mindset. And especially in the real estate industry, I hate to say it, but I mean, if you are not a risk taker, you're probably not a top performer. I think you would agree at some point in time, you know, top performers have that moment in time where it's like, okay, we need to do something different. We need to shake it up. We need to be, you know, pioneering, if you will. And if you don't do that, if you're just like everyone else, you're going to get the same results as everyone else. Let's be honest.
And let's be honest, the system is set up for you to be just like everyone else. Like, this is not something that will automatically happen to you. You have to be the driver of the outcome. And that driving is the responsibility and accountability part that a lot of people want to blame on a broker, or blame on something else and never take accountability for. I'll give you an example. It's very exciting. You know, we just announced our partnership with Sirhan in California. Mm-hmm. So there's an opportunity to use Sirhan Studios, which is their in-house videographer, very talented videography team. It's a very media-forward company. And we had this great opportunity to do some kind of demo video reels just so people could get an experience of that, right? And, you know, I said to the team, when you book this, don't just show up and say to the videographer, tell me what to do. You come up with an idea. How do you want it to look? What do you want it to say about you? And creative direct your own outcome so that you make the most of that amount of time that you have there. But for a lot of people, that's not intuitive. And I do think that those are the types of, like, you have to take that, you have to have that kind of drive and that kind of vision in order to really stand out in a competitive market. I'm sure Dallas is quite competitive too for real estate.
Yeah. I mean, we're kind of, we have our own version of Beverly Hills out here in like the Highland Park area. I don't know if you've heard of that, but we have our own Beverly Hills out here. So, I mean, we're not California, but we're very, it's a very competitive market for a lot of really good reasons, mostly because we have done some good things as a government here, in the state, and attracting the right types of business, which attracts the right type of people, which attracts more homeowners and home buyers.
Can I ask you a side note question that's just of news relevance right now? I've been hearing a lot about data centers, and I think Texas is absorbing quite a few of them. Do you have data centers in your market?
We do. We have lots of data centers. So typically you want a data center in somewhere where there's not a lot of
people.
You know, people, but catastrophes too, right? Like environmental catastrophes. You don't want to be on a fault line, obviously. You don't want to be in a tornado pathway. You know, for the most part, other than a really bad thunderstorm, that's about all we have in at least Dallas-Fort Worth. There's other parts of the state that might have a tornado every, you know, 30 years or something like that. But for the most part, we don't get those.
Is it affecting the real estate values in the areas where they're announcing proposed data centers? Like, I've seen some stories about people kind of like having super low water pressure and concerned about sediment in their drinking water. And these are people who maybe have owned their home for a very long time and their values are just like falling apart. So I just wonder if, you know, since Texas seems to be a destination, how are you handling that with regard to real estate values, or has it not really affected you yet?
We haven't seen it affect us yet, but it will. It's on its way, because the reality is, it's, what are these data centers for? They're for crypto mining. They're for AI, right? You know, they're powering all these AI processes and whatnot. So it is going to absolutely come to a head. I think for the most part right now, it's seen as good, because data centers are bringing investors, which are bringing companies, which are bringing, again, more jobs. And that has always been Texas's philosophy, is bring the jobs to the state. The people will follow. The paychecks will follow, and the home buying will follow. And it's served us pretty well in Dallas, Fort Worth. Austin, I mean, love Austin to death. Great city, amazing real estate in the rolling hills there. But they kind of peaked too early, unfortunately. So, you know, we here in Dallas,
what
Fort
do you
Worth,
mean? We're the
spaghetti.
They peaked too early. You mean everybody ran from LA to Austin during COVID, and that... Yeah. Prices got really high and then people left again? Or what do you mean?
People left again. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about, Corby.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of places that had a surge of people. Although I will say, even though some people have come back, I do have a lot of clients who are concerned about the economic conditions in our state, but also AI. Unfortunately, and it's new, I know, and it's like the dreaded, you know, we have to get around it, another hurdle for humans to jump thing that we also created. But people are moving out of state just for jobs, for some economic security, you know, because people are losing their jobs. It's like insane.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they want their money here. You guys don't have taxes like we do here, right?
Yeah, we don't have any taxes, state income taxes here. So that's us in Florida, you know, and what is it, Delaware?
Right.
And I think, was it Vegas?
Do you have very high property taxes, though?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, between 1.75 and 2.5%,
so
typically.
Maybe they make up for it a little bit there.
Make up for a little bit there, For sure. For sure. But Florida. And we might outlaw it. So you never know. That's on the ballot for the next.
I'd love that. I'd love that they're considering that in Florida. And if they do that in Dallas, that would be amazing. I will be curious to see how they supplement, like, how they supplement services if they take that out? Is there like a surplus of money or something that they're like, okay, everybody can stop paying taxes on their primary? I mean, I love it. I don't trust the government with accountability for any money that we give them. And I never look to the government to solve problems because they have no track record of actually doing it. They make a lot of promises, but I'm voting no on everything. Just putting that on here because they, you know, it's like until I see like a true account, like every, literally every single day, it's a new story about fraud, about, you know, some taxpayer initiative that ended up becoming money laundering or something. You know, it's like there's so much of that everywhere probably, but certainly in my city and in LA specifically and in our state, it's crazy. So I'm not a fan of having the government fix problems because I don't think they do it very well.
Well, and with all due respect, probably not in California in particular, but you know, who's to say that maybe one day California figure it out? I mean, I thought things were kind of okay.
So.
Schwarzenegger was in office, to be honest. I thought he did a decent job, you know?
Listen, I think it's whack-a-mole. It's like whoever's priorities are dominant. But when you realize now that there is it's kind of like the military industrial complex. There's like a homelessness industrial complex. And you know what? I used to work in DC. I don't know if I shared that with you, but I worked in progressive politics, political, like public relations, basically. And I went to DC thinking, and this is like just after college, I thought like I could change the world. Like there was good in the world and I wanted to be a voice for the people that were doing good. You know, I came there with full heart and I realized very quickly that there are people that profit off the problems and there are, and the longer the problem lasts, if it's a good running point for re-election, like that the people who are, we elect to solve the problems have a vested interest in keeping the problems going. As long as it's the thing that keeps getting them reelected. And once I realized that these two sides actually function as a fuel for each other, I'm like, that's why these things aren't being solved. That's why homelessness will not be solved by this solution, because these people have jobs because of the problem and these people get reelected by keeping the problem going. Now, where the money goes is another thing. But as long as there's really no incentive for the desired outcome to be achieved, I don't think there's any sense in pouring more money into those problems. But anyway, I digress. Okay, we have a lot to get into, but I do want to just say to the audience here, this guy has closed over $1 billion in sales. How big is your team, Justin?
So I've got over 50 on my area team, which was a team that I sort of inherited last year. I was asked to lead this team. And this is solo agents that join the brokerage, and it's our way of making sure they get taken care of and mentored and feel like they're part of a community. Because, you know, if you come into a new brokerage and you're not part of a team, you could feel a little bit abandoned, like
you're on and you're on your own. Absolutely.
So I have that team. And then at the beginning of this year, I started a high performance team. And this is really only for individuals that are looking to do at least $10 million a year in personal production. Called Top Gun Team. And so I've got five people currently on that team as well.
Got it. Okay. What do you see as the thing that, like, you know, so we just turned from a brokerage into a team ourselves. I'm still navigating those waters. But I've always been a huge fan of, you know, agent independence. I really believe that people should generate their own stream of income, should own their own database, you know, and not rely on anyone else to hand them anything. We don't do Zillow. Do you do Zillow leads?
I do Premier Agent. So I pay a good bit of money every month to advertise with Zillow and then I get the leads. We are trying to position ourselves potentially for Zillow Flex to be a Zillow Flex team in the future. There's a couple other teams across Epic that have done so and had good success with it. We will see. Zillow is a whole nother thing in itself. And I mean,
well, we're going to get into that right now. We need to talk about this. Okay. Well, that's a good lead in. Let's talk about for a second. So you saw this week that Zillow sued Compass.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And they're in bed again in the lawsuit land. So the reason why is because Compass partnered with MRED to distribute listings nationwide. And then just a couple days ago, announced a Bright MLS partnership And they're going to have all Bright MLS subscribers are going to have access to Compass's listings nationwide. So obviously Compass wants a nationwide MLS and it's got to hand it to him. He just does not wait for like any industry response. He is a disruptor. You know, I'm not mad at that part. I'm really not, except that where is it headed? You know, and what are your thoughts on a nationwide MLS?
I think it has to happen. I mean, I think the, listen, local, it's cute, you know, but I think it's very small-minded. So it's small thinking, it's small potatoes, right? You know, if you get a nationwide MLS, we can service our clients so much better, right? Especially our relocation clients, just that market segment alone gets a whole new level of service by opening up the MLS to nationwide. As an agent, I would love to see that somehow wrapped into a, you know, nationwide licensing sort of platform.
Oh my God. Listen, that's dope. Okay. So I'm going to Harvard and I have to do a big presentation on what I think the future of real estate in our country could look like. And a nationwide license is part of the biggest part of that proposal. So actually, I think that's a great idea. So clearly we're on the same page. That means there's an appetite for it. For me, I feel like I could, you know, as I think about AI and how it could replace certain parts of our job and hopefully do it even better, maybe than a human, like compliance, you know, are these forms filled out correctly? Do we have, transaction management or something, you know, these kinds of things easily can be replaced by AI. But what can't be replaced by AI? Years of sales experience, the psychology piece, you know, all of the art part of our job, walking in, seeing the space, feeling it, determining what the right vibe is, you know, adding sense to your open house, whatever. These are little silly things that I'm talking about, but they're human things. And I'm like, there's so much value in the human in our business, despite what all the prop tech company propaganda is trying to say. I think the human in our business is very irreplaceable. And 100%. I think if I had a nationwide license, I would be able to use the highest level of my skill set and talent to help, you know, my clients, wherever they go throughout the life, you know, you spend 20 years working with somebody and then they go to Utah and I can't help them anymore. And they might end up with somebody they don't trust or don't, you know or has no track record like mine. So, you know, I love that you just said that. I'm going to have to interview you for my project.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's something I've just thought about in pretty great detail because of exactly what you said. I mean, in our business, we try to create lifelong clients. At least that's what I claim anyway. But when they do, when your clients get transferred for work or whatever, and you can no longer serve them in that capacity, that's a miss. That kind of sucks to your point, right?
Yep.
What if you could work, you know, really like you could be with each other through the entirety of that journey together? And I'd say even beyond that, some agents are not cut out to have a nationwide license, right? So we have to understand it's a fit for certain agents. Like you and I, obviously, we have an appetite for it. Some agents won't. I think one of the reasons why I got into this business, and you might agree, is the freedom piece of being a realtor, right? Freedom
That's
of schedule.
That's what they sell you.
Well, you don't realize you work your ass off even more. But like
I work so much more than I did before.
Yeah. So say I'm going to spend my summers in California. I'm going to spend my winters in Florida. I'm going to spend my springs in Texas. And I'm going to spend my falls and on the East Coast somewhere. Right.
Right.
And you can now legitimately do that with ease because of this nationwide, you know, license idea.
Right. So what we're speaking to right now is that currently licensing is on a state by state level. Mm-hmm. But you are seeing, for example, the NAR lawsuit, which affected all real estate agents kind of nationally. And the idea that there could be local rules that change state to state, but state by state, it's the same criteria basically for the basic part of salesperson education. And then everything else is just learning the local forms, right? AI could certainly help with compliance, could even educate. Say I have a nationwide license and I have clients who are moving to Utah. I have a partner on the ground in Utah. But as far as the higher level negotiation part, I'm working with them on that. And the compliance piece is monitored by AI. And there's errors and omissions insurance that covers us nationally. And we have one nationwide MLS and maybe even one nationwide pocket listing service too, which was another conversation that happened last week. So, but just listen to the language that Zillow put out in their recent article, okay? This is the first line of it. It's really good.
Oh boy.
The organization that controls Chicago's home listing rules broke the law by conspiring with the country's largest brokerage to hide listings from buyers and shut out competition. Zillow is suing to stop them from taking the conspiracy nationwide.
The strength of the words in that statement is just too much.
It's an antitrust lawsuit that they're setting. I mean, how many of these can... That's the other question. It's like Compass knows what it's getting into. How many of these can it stand before there has to be, probably, just making this up, some kind of federal intervention? You know, I mean, these lawsuits are set precedents. Sometimes they're state by state, but there are some of these MLSs that cover multi-state markets. Like, for example, I used to sell real estate in Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Mm-hmm. And we had three different associations, but our actual like form making, you know, like organizations were all, you know, regional, covered multiple states. And it was only the state addendums that were state law specific. So what I'm saying is, either this is going to blow up Encompass's face and Zillow wins, because we all know Zillow is the de facto national MLS anyway.
Yeah.
But I think if we had a nationwide MLS that we had the option to opt into, it would give us a larger lobby than even NAR, because what really everybody's fighting over is listing visibility, which is bread and butter. Who gets to the client first and why? That's what we're fighting about.
And I feel like deep down, I mean, beneath all the layers here, that's really what Zillow is afraid of. Is they're afraid of us going back to a pocket listing oriented industry. And to be honest, and maybe I'm, again, this is against, you know, popular belief, but I am also a proponent of pocket listings. I think they have a place in our industry. I'm not saying
that's a great place to take, just take a beat right there. They have a great place in our industry, and we'll be right back. If you like honesty and transparency in your real estate news and editorial, please hit subscribe, put a little bell, just a little bell thing, you know, make it be a notification. So you said you think this might be against popular opinion, but you're a fan of pocket listings. Why?
Because I think pocket listings are a demonstration as an agent that you're maintaining good relationships with your peers out there. I think it's...
With your peers? That's an interesting take. I have never heard that before. Do tell.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you an example out here. One of the markets that I serve pretty intensely is a city called Flower Mountain. Flower Mountain, the average home sale price is about $1.2 million. They easily have plenty of listings that are over two, three, four, I mean, all the way up to 10 million, right? So it's on the water. It's a very nice, lush area. And, you know, the kind of people that want to see properties in Flower Mound, by and large, they get excited if you can bring them a off-market property, right? A pocket listing of sorts. So
I get it. So you're saying because we're in spaces where demand is high and inventory is low, it strengthens your agent network to have access to pocket listings.
Yes. And I get access to those because of people that I've maintained good relationships with over the years that are part of different brokerages, by the way, right?
Use that in your listing presentations? Do you use that as like a marketing tool? Like, we can pre-market this. I can reach out to my network of people, like that.
Absolutely.
Kind of thing?
Yeah, your network is your net worth. Yeah, of course I market that.
But don't you think you're leaving something on the table by selling it that way? I mean, like, don't you think the value could go even higher than what you or the seller project? I mean, could there be the possibility that you're leaving money on the table by doing it that way?
Of course. There's always a possibility of it being either way, right? But I think the exclusivity factor, I think, really resonates with a lot of people. I think pocket listings represent exclusivity. I think they have a place. I'm not saying it's a complete pervasiveness of them nationwide and for everything, but I think they have a place in our industry is what I'll say.
Well, here's what the Bright MLS announcement says. This is on Housing Wire. It says, the Mid-Atlantic-based MLS announced Wednesday that Compass International Holdings has committed to making its nationwide data available to Bright MLS subscribers. It has agreed to subsidize Bright MLS subscriptions for agents in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and elsewhere in the country. The industry is evolving to give consumers more choice, and we support that progress. This is the fourth MLS Compass has partnered with. Look, I didn't even realize this. Our very own LA MLS Claw announced it would add Compass's full active listing inventory to its system. But I'm like, don't we already have that? I mean, I think every Compass agent I know puts their listing in the MLS. So if that means that I now can look at Compass's, you know, Alabama listings just through my own access, that's interesting. This could get messy if you're making all these partnerships with random small MLSs. How does that achieve, other than Compass getting, you know, a local LA agent to be able to access its listings you could already find on Zillow or something, until it's like a really a comprehensive database, I don't see how this achieves a nationwide MLS. Am I missing something?
Well, okay, so this is just my perspective on the matter, and this was based on, you know, years ago, someone, when I was building, you know, my business initially, said, you know how you get a bunch of, you know, big clients or big whale clients? And I was like, how? You get a bunch of small fish, because whales, right, eat a bunch of small fish. So I think their philosophy on this is, hey, if we get enough small fish, it'll start to create some sort of
bigger fish, some whale.
Yes, exactly, right? The bigger fish now will take notice, and now the bigger fish will get involved. Because just to go to create bigger fish is a difficult proposition. Bigger fish are probably like, oh, right, that's a little, you know, too soon. We don't want to be an early adopter or whatever. But the little fish,
well,
are
it
like,
could
sure,
it could be, except that we're listen, Compass is a significant amount of our nationwide real estate market now. So if they just announced open access to all their listings, here's the website or something, sign up and everybody else join, you know, it couldn't be as easy as that, you know? But the thing is that I think, this is my hypothesis, that we might be gearing up for major exiting from NAR. So when NAR recently released that they were detaching MLS membership from NAR membership, that was a small little announcement that didn't go very far as in making news headlines. We covered it on the show because I'm paying attention to this stuff. But, you know, the bigger industry didn't shake at all. I even called my MLS and said, okay, so say I wasn't a member of NAR, like, could I still get the forms? And they're like, not through us. You know, it's like, okay, well, then I still have to be a member. You know, I can't not get the forms. But the future could very easily look like nationwide MLS membership, no National Association of Realtors membership. And I believe that Refkin publicly stated that within 2 years, he was not going to require NAR membership for his agents. And some companies like Howard Hanna have already declared this. So NAR is in trouble. But if we're thinking about what the future could look like, if the agents had their lobby inside of data control instead of bureaucratic control, we do have a stronger case to make against companies that make money off of us, that, you know, kind of pretend to be brokerages for the purposes of legality, but really don't operate as brokerages like a Zillow.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what do you see the future of our industry looking like even in 2 years? Do you think that there's going to be an exodus from NAR?
I think it's a very high probability. I think we're going to see major consolidation. I mean, it's just like anything, right? Like whenever there's disruption, it's usually followed by either fragmentation or consolidation. In my opinion, it's going to be followed by consolidation in our industry, right?
Okay. I mean, it's already happening, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's already happening.
RE/MAX
nationwide
Real.
MLS, yeah. You know, not as many small, you know, organizations, right? Because let's be honest, like if I'm going to be licensed across 5 states, let's say, I mean, I'm only in 2 right now, but let's say I wanted to join another 5 and I've got to join all the local, you know, organizations and MLSs for each of the 5. I mean, that's kind of a pain in the ass. And it kind of feels like you're being nickel and dimed to death, to be honest.
You're being robbed. 100%. You are. It's true. I belong currently to like 5 or 6 MLSs. And I get those, you know, bill subscriptions. I'm like, oh my God. And you still have to pay state and local associations. And, you know, I do see value in our associations. When the wildfires were happening, CAR like stepped in a big way. And, you know, I see value. I do. Even though I bang my head against their very outdated, slow-moving behemoth inability to, you know, really digest what it is that is on the mind of most ordinary agents. They just can't seem to move fast enough to address our real concerns. But I do think there's a role for some organized something, like for sure. And you don't want it just to be the wild, wild west either. You know, like there should be some code of ethics. You know, I love that we could all, even though many people now don't even enforce the code of ethics, but, you know, I love the idea that our industry does have a code of performance objectives and like certain standards.
Sure.
But the reality
like
of it is
like a lawyer, you know, a lawyer's code or doctor's code.
Yes. I mean, but the reality is there are so many unethical agents. Some of them even have law degrees, you know, and the way they talk about people and the way they behave in our market, I'm like, you know, if I didn't think I was going to get sued, I would take this guy on head to head. It is like rough out here, but it's the police policing the police. So you'll never really get the results that you want. It has to be personal choice to just not be an a-hole, you know, and just like actually, you know, put your clients' objectives ahead of your, you know, capital objectives or your shareholder dividends or whatever. And that is very hard as things get bigger and bigger and bigger. It's scary in one way because real estate is hyper local, right? It
sure
is, you know,
it absolutely
but with
is.
AI, the metrics, data analysis, you can kind of get granular on value, on permitting history. Oh my God, I got to tell you about this. Have you tried breezy.ai yet?
Yes.
You did. Did you use the Underbuilt tool?
No. I looked at it a little bit in my TC. I've had kind of mess with it as well, but yeah.
Okay. Breezy.ai is a new app from friend of the show, James Harris. Okay. He came in and talked about it a little bit, and then I test drove it the other day. And, you know, there are some things in there where you're like, okay, for me, a CMA to really be effective needs to include off-market sales. I need mm-hmm. something that's more powerful than me to find the title history of recent sales that are not going to necessarily appear in the MLS and figure out what the condition of that property is. Tell me if it had permits pulled recently. Is it a fixer or was it a done deal? Like, look at search where it's been marketed, see if there are any old pictures online, you know, like find the digital footprint. That is like research I don't have time to do. If a CMA did that, I would just be like,
yeah.
Okay. But it does do this. It has this feature called Underbuilt, where you type in an address and then you hit the button. And within a minute, you know, it gives you all the different zoning restrictions, building regulations. It tells you how much square footage you can add legally to that site. It tells you, like, you know, what the easements are. You know, it's genius.
Ooh.
It's genius. And that's the future of AI helping real estate agents. It's like getting really granular with certain things.
Not having to deal with the city and calling up your favorite city engineer a million times to get answers.
I mean, to be fair, you always have to check for accuracy, right? Like, I have not quality controlled it, like, by doing an actual manual research myself. Everything needs to be quality controlled for sure. But I'm sure it's going to get better and better and better. I think that there is a hyper-local value to real estate, but to our actual process, and as AI starts to sort certain things out, I do think that there's bigger opportunity for the real estate talent to make bigger nationwide teams And, you know, I think the future has a lot of possibility for the human talent in our industry. Yeah.
I would agree. And I mean, everyone's all freaked out by AI, but AI is only going to make our, I would say, tactical processes easier so that we can be more focused on the human elements of what we do. Right.
Yep.
And you kind of spoke to that earlier, right? I mean, the relational piece, you're never going to replace the relational piece with AI. It just does not exist. It's the heartbeat, you know, of our operation is the human to human, you know, belly to belly, eyeball to eyeball, you know, contact that we make with people. And that's never going to change.
Totally. I agree. Well, listen, as we wrap up, I would love for you to share with the audience, for people who really want to tap into luxury or, you know, some spaces where you've had to kind of start from nothing and get in there, what guidance do you have given the current climate right now? Like, what should people be doing to crack open new clientele, moving up
in the world? It's like a ladder, right? So, you know, and I can remember cracking my first $1 million deal even, you know, years ago. And that was a big deal to me. And now it's like, okay, you know, $10 million deal. And you just keep moving up the rungs. I think you have to think about every little decision you make in terms of how you brand yourself is going to be very, very important. What's your authority branding? What's your expertise? All of that. I mean, because people see everything. You mentioned digital footprint earlier. Your digital footprint is all over the internet. And so it needs to be 100% aligned. If you're going to go after the luxury market, especially the super upscale luxury market, you better have a brand that speaks luxury, because people will go, the first thing they're going to do, they're going to go Google you or ChatGPT you. And if your brand doesn't resonate with them in a luxury way, you've missed your opportunity. The second thing is you need to hang out where they hang out. So, you know, I'll give you a quick example. I had dinner a couple weeks ago with some pretty big time, you know, producers of some different brokerages out here at the Cowboys Club. This is an exclusive dinner club where people go to, you know, and it's a membership fee, you know, plus your monthly fee and whatever. But the thing is, the type of people who are buying luxury real estate, they hang out there, they go eat there, right? So that's a place that I frequent and I go eat. So, you know, you got to hang out where those type of people hang out. And then you all, at the end of the day, you have to just be able to be a human and be a person. And that's sometimes the hardest thing I think for agents to do, is just to really humanize themselves. But once you've got a celebrity, an athlete, you know, someone that's a super successful entrepreneur, you know, worth $1 billion, and you're in the same room with them, they want to know that you're human at the end of the day, right? Mm-hmm. The whole gawking and being, you know, enamored by their wealth and whatnot, that shit doesn't impress them, right?
Right.
In fact, it's not. Actually a turnoff. It's a turnoff for
of
them.
Of course.
So you've got to be able to walk the walk.
Now, okay, final question, then I'm going to let you go. Is it okay that I dance sometimes on my Instagram and to be taken seriously as a real estate agent?
Is it okay? I would say it's more than okay. I'd say that is part of your personal branding, Courtney. Yeah.
That's right.
I'm going to go watch some of your dance videos now after
that. Yeah, I was just on a boat yesterday. My sister was recording me. I was dancing, but I also do, you know, some line dancing. I'm just loving line dancing lately. So I like do a little line dance. It's like the piece of joy that I have. If I get into the office early enough, I like get in there and learn to dance and just record it just for the fun of it. But, you know, I put a post up and I took a poll, like, should I ask, you know, Ryan to line dance at the launch party? And there was only one, well, there were, you know, two people, but one is like a bot account or something. I don't even know. But one agent, a luxury agent that I know, voted no. And I'm like, seriously?
What?
I don't know. I was like, oh, really? You're the one trying to kill my, you know, harsh my mellow? Is that what? Like, come on. Oh my God. It's so funny. But I'm like, I see you. I see you, girl. If you're watching, I see you.
Those haters out there, man.
Haters gonna hate. Yeah. But I'm like, you know, the one thing about real estate is you can literally work like 60 hours a week. It's such a grind. And I think it's important for all of us to, you know, to your point about humanizing ourselves, is to like find some joy and like invest in friendships and relationships like we have, you know, where I could call you and be like, what do you think about this? And you can actually share candidly how you feel, because I think we've lost a lot of that in this like post-COVID censorship moment. And I want to bring it back. You know, I think our voices are the things that make us uniquely human, and we should continue to lift ours.
I couldn't agree more. And by the way, if you want to get into line dancing seriously, come out here and let's go to Billy Bob's and we'll go have some fun at Billy Bob's.
All right. I think that sounds amazing. Let's do that. Thank you so much for joining me, Jessa. I'm going to put all your contact information in the show notes. If there's anything that you wanted to include that we didn't include today, feel free to send it over to me and I'll put it in there. Thank you so much and have a great day.
Thank you, Courtney.
And to you guys out there, I will see you next time on The Clean Clothes. Bye.